20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's happening, everybody? Matt here, but you can call me Mattel, and welcome to the Pack-A-Day Podcast, the single greatest every single day Packers podcast out on the internet. With me, not as always, Zachary Jacobson is sick tonight. So tonight, I have the magnanimous Maggie Loney. I'm not used to your new last name yet.
I'm not either, so it's okay.
I said that right, though, Loney?
Yes.
Okay, so, as always, I am drinking a beer. Last week it was the terrible Milwaukee's Best, also known as the Beast. Tonight I am drinking Mexican lager from Ska Brewing in Durango, Colorado. It's a craft Mexican style beer. I think of it as like a really good Tecate. Maggie, I know you're always drinking. What do you got tonight?
That sounds so bad. You're always drinking. I have a Hazy Little Thing IPA from Sierra Nevada, which is phenomenal.
Sierra Nevada is a really good. Really good brewery. A lot of good stuff.
I'm always drinking when I podcast.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, if you can do the tour, highly recommend it. Totally worth it.
So we are supposed to do a preview of what the Packers O-line is going to look like this year.
Okay. I can do that.
Now, it's kind of hard to estimate exactly how many they're going to keep. Maggie and I were looking pre-show at kind of the Packers trend. And outside of the five starters, they've kept anywhere from three backups to five backups. And interesting tidbit, the 2018 Tennessee Titans had 11 offensive linemen on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bananas number. You have to think about what position group was cut to make that number. And I don't see the Packers being able to sacrifice that much depth in another position to bolster the line that much.
So it looks like the Titans last year only held four wide receivers. Okay, so I should say I'm going by the Pro Football Reference numbers here, and Pro Football Reference has usually about 15 positionless players, so just sorting by position, they have four listed at wide receiver.
Yeah, that's the Packers, I feel like, have to have at least six. So if you want to just do simple Titans-Packers swap, 9 and 6 would be my guess. 9 linemen, 6 receivers.
Yeah, I think calling it 9. So when we looked, 2016, they kept 8. 2017 they kept 10, and then 2018 they kept 9. So if we just make it an average of 9, I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah, and I think I'm curious your take, but I think that the starters on the line are pretty solidified now. So I think most of what we're talking about today is probably who those four potential guys would be that would be backing them up.
And I think if the only spot that you could even consider up in the air would be right guard. Billy Turner, who we've seen in the league in Denver, maybe Cole Madison comes out of nowhere or Justin McCray kind of gets his poop in a group, but I think that Turner, the right guard, is his spot to lose.
Yeah, I think so too. I love his versatility to be able to maybe swing out if something were to happen to Brian Bulaga. I know he has tackle experience as well, but I think that they paid him a lot of money to come in and start on the line. I don't think he's brought in just to be a depth guy.
Yeah, totally. And we also talk about his team headshot. He is wearing sunglasses in his team picture. That is just like next level awesome.
He's great. Did you see, I don't know who did it. Someone said that Billy Turner was like a Pokemon evolution of Davante Adams. And I can't get that out of my head now.
It's absolutely perfect. I made a joke last year about Denard Robinson, the what do they call him, shoestring. He came out of Michigan, played as an offensive weapon for Jacksonville. Okay, so yeah. The Packers linebacker who went to the Colts.
Something Thomas.
No, Eric Walden. Eric Walden is what I'm thinking of. Eric Walden, part of the reason that Colin Kaepernick went ham in the playoffs. So Eric Walden looks like if Denard Robinson got caught in like a Mad Max situation.
That's awesome.
So
you're wrong.
When the Billy Turner Pokemon stuff came out, that's where my head went. Was like, yeah, he is totally. He's like a grizzled, heavier version.
Yeah, he's like the Blastoise of the team, I think.
Which, I mean, Can we be honest? If you didn't pick Squirtle as your starter, you are not min-maxing properly.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, you had to.
I mean, if you're going to go against Brock without having to evolve a Pidgey or a Butterfree, then, like, obviously you went with Squirtle.
This is going to have, like, the lowest ratings in the history of the Pack-A-Day. The 361, I think, this is episode. It's going to just tank. We're going to lose half our audience for talking about
honestly,
Pokemon.
Like the viewer...
But Mike Daniels played Pokemon Go.
And the listeners that come in for Zach and I's show know that we're going to go off the rails. We're not really going to talk much intelligent football. We're going to be like, yeah, so anyway. Okay, so...
Well, we've already covered beer and Pokemon, so I think we're covering our bases pretty
100%.
Well.
100%. So we've established that Billy Turner is likely going to be starting at right guard. Brian Bulaga, arguably the best pass-blocking right tackle in the league when healthy, but that's the big question.
Pro Football Focus had him ranked as second among all right tackles in the NFL last season.
Before anyone...
And so for everyone that is concerned about his injury history, which is valid, when he's healthy, he's phenomenal.
And before anyone gets into my mentions talking about Brian Bulaga, I said he is the best right tackle. No, I said arguably the best pass-blocking right tackle in the league.
Yes.
The argument is there. And
there's a difference, but yes.
And we all know that I worship at the altar of Brett Coleman and his video on the pass blocking technique of Brian Bulaga has reached infamy at this point.
I just like the way that he says Iowa personally.
Brian Bulaga. Iowa.
That's why I keep coming back. Yep.
So,
every time.
Speaking of Brian Bulaga and Brett Coleman's coverage of the Packers hug, a few weeks ago, Jeff Schwartz did a mailbag for SB Nation. And he was looking for questions. And I asked him, I said, the new Packers offensive line coach is a much more first step, chest punch kind of offensive line coach and doesn't necessarily advocate for the hug, the quote-unquote hug that everyone thinks the Packers are cheating with. And what Jeff's response, response to that was... he said, if there is a established veteran who has a technique that is ingrained in him, no good offensive line coach is going to try and stop that. And TJ Lang actually came out and not only agreed with him, but also said he doesn't understand where all this hype on the Packers hug is coming from because he said he's never hugged anyone. So, yeah, a simple...
Man, that's kind of sad.
Okay, well, I don't think he meant... Literally. I think he meant in terms of blocking.
You know, the argument is there that he meant literally.
I don't know. He's a really...
We'll never really know.
He's a cuddly-looking dude. I'd hug him.
I would hug him, too.
And...
He would swallow me whole. I shook... This is a side story. I shook BJ Raji's hand once, and my hand was, like, engulfed. Like, I couldn't see it when we shook hands, but... Now we're just going on a tangent.
You know, now I'm looking up BJ Raji's combine numbers. So BJ Raji is 6'2", 337 pounds at the time of the combine. Did not list a hand size. And this dang it, that kind of sucks because I was going to go off on a rant about NFL hands.
I mean, I can assure you my hands are very, very small. So
I have what would be considered pretty average size male hands in that I have to wear nitrile gloves at work a lot. And if I wear a medium-sized glove, it is skin-tight, and a large size is comfortable. So that I would consider my hands pretty average.
Okay. I need, like, extra small gloves, and they're a little big.
Well, so the way...
So, like, proportionately to my body, you know, they might be a little small.
Well, the way the NFL measures hand size at the combine is actually, it's kind of interesting. You stretch your fingers as far as they can go, trying to make your pinky and your thumb as parallel as possible. And then they measure the distance between your pinky fingertip and your thumb fingertip. And that distance is your quote-unquote hand size. Now, I have...
I feel like I need to go...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Get a ruler. Sorry, go ahead. I just said I need a ruler.
So, according to that, I have bigger hands than Randall Cobb, and I have the same size hands as Jeff Janis.
So you're the savior that the Packers need this year.
No, because I run like a 5'8", 40. it's just I have freakishly flexible hands, and I can stretch my hands really far. And there was actually a report that Johnny Manziel was getting hand massages to increase his flexibility so his hand size would be bigger at the combine.
That's kind of awesome.
There's your fun.
I mean, that's one way to cheat the
system. it's within the rules of the system. Like if you, in the same way that power lifters have a crazy arch in their back when they're doing the bench press to lower the range of motion, any little advantage that you can get is within the rules is the way to do it.
I just got to start typing a lot more so that my fingers are super flexible and stretch a little bit, like pinky to thumb.
So for me, it was gotta guitar, playing guitar and doing hand stretches and stuff. That's what really increased my flexibility.
See, I played guitar, so maybe my hands are bigger than they would have been had I not played guitar. Maybe they would have been extra small if I did not.
If you want to learn some crazy hand stretches, look up Paul Gilbert. He is the former guitarist for Mr. Big. They had a power ballad in the early 90s. I'm the one who wants to be with you. He's an amazing guitarist and is stuck behind the fame of a hair metal band.
I mean, he's living the dream, really.
He's actually, last I checked, he was living in Japan, like just hanging out. So, yeah, good for him.
Okay, so the offensive line.
Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about something. Okay, so the offensive line. So we talked about the tackles. Well, no, we talked about one tackle. We talked about the right guard. Moving into the center, Corey Linsley, who has been a Pro Bowl-level center since his rookie year. You can actually, I got receipts, go back. Rodgers was calling for Linsley to be in the Pro Bowl halfway through his rookie year, and I still say to this day that he has been the biggest Pro Bowl snub outside of David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And I think, like, Packers fans take his Iron Man stability for granted, and I hope nothing happens. I hope that he continues that Iron Man streak, but that's why I especially liked the Elgton Jenkins signing or drafting in the second round this year. I mean, I know that he's projected to play as a guard for the Packers, but he has so much center experience that if you did potentially need depth behind Linsley, he is the perfect candidate to be that person. Because last year, they didn't really have a true center on the roster behind Linsley, and that's a little concerning when you already have a beat-up quarterback who's potentially running for his life in some situations.
And also, Elgton Jenkins, I guess we could also talk about how that's a really good showing of the changing of the guard, and that Ted Thompson almost exclusively drafted left tackles. And so for the Packers to draft a true center kind of shows that Goot really is running the show, and his draft mentality is really going to be there. Even if Ted has some influence, we can already see the departure.
Definitely. Yeah, I 100%.
As much as I agree with the idea of drafting left tackles, because they are 9 times out of 10 going to be the best blocker on their team, when you have a center whose job it is to call out slide assignments and understand the way that the defensive line is going to move, I think if you find a guy who did that in college, you're better off taking that guy to play center than trying to teach a left tackle to play center.
Oh, definitely. And because I know you love your relative athletic scores, Elgton Jenkins as a center was a 9.34. And then as a guard, he projects at 9.57. So super phenomenal athlete at both of the interior positions.
And
on
that
the
is
line.
Another thing that Goot has been doing is the dude just loves athletes, man. Like I think that the only person that he's drafted in the last 2 years that was less than an eight, I think, was Cole Madison.
Like, I think so, yeah. Because I think he was like a 5 or 6.
Yeah, he was in the 5 to 6 range, the slightly above average for an NFL player athlete level, whereas everyone else has been a plus athlete or a freak athlete.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess if you're looking to fill out the bottom half of your roster, like with undrafted guys, bringing in the super athletic dudes is not a bad way to go.
Last year, I was huge, huge, huge on Gerard DeBeer, not just because of his name, but because he is a two-sport athlete. He's an Olympic-level, I believe, discus thrower who played in Arizona and just won with athleticism. And also, I mean, how cool would it be to have a guy on the Packers whose name is DeBeer?
Wasn't he with the Bills? He went somewhere, and I was like, okay, DeBeer makes sense being wherever city it was. I think it was Buffalo. I was like, you know, they're like the Packers of the AFC. They're fine. Yeah, and then he came to the Packers, and I was like, okay, now it's really perfect. Didn't his jersey sell out, too? Like, his custom jerseys, people were already making them just because it was so perfect for Green Bay.
So people were using the custom jersey maker to make his jerseys, and then the Packers Pro Shop started selling them officially, and they sold out in, like, the first 10 minutes.
That's what I had thought, so... He has to at least be a practice squad candidate, if nothing else. Like, he has to make the team in some capacity.
And actually, Evan Tex Western of Acme Packing Company, he and I were discussing the correct beer to drink while wearing a DeBeer jersey. With his number being 7.2, we were looking at 7.2 ABV beers. And a very, very popular nationwide 7.2% beer is Arrogant Bastard Ale by Stone Brewing.
That's perfect.
So, if Gerard sees some playing time this year, go out, get yourself a DeBeer jersey, and get yourself an Arrogant Bastard.
You won't regret either decision because it's a great beer and a good jersey.
And as much as I would love that jersey, I disagree on the beer. I'm not a big, like hoppy, bitter. I'm a stout man. I want my beer to be as smooth as can possibly be and as black as the devil's soul.
Like, I'm already bitter, so I don't need beer to make me more bitter, I guess. So that's
Speaking
fair.
Of, I'm out of beer. I'm going to go get another one. If you would like to start in on our left guard situation.
Yeah, so I think that Lane Taylor is going to be your default starter at left tackle or at left guard, excuse me. I don't think that there's a ton. I know there's going to be a ton of competition at camp, but I think that he will immediately be the left guard. I think that you can't look at last year as the end all be all because of his injuries. He fought through them. He knows Bakhtiari to his left, Lindsey to his right. They've got that synergy on the left side of the line. But I do think that Elgton Jenkins will push for playing time. And if Cole Madden looks as impressive as he has supposedly been looking in minicamp and in team activities, then those are two names that potentially could either push Taylor for the job or will become immediate backups at the position.
So the only thing to bring up, I think, about Cole Madison on the left side is he's naturally a right guard, right? Like, am I reading that right?
So, yes. Yep.
I was talking to Bucky's fifth quarter writer, Owen Reese. He was a college lineman, and he told me that it's actually it's like learning how to be ambidextrous when you switch sides on the line, because the blocking technique is the same, but learning how to kick step the other direction can really throw some people off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm left-handed, so when you tell me to do anything with my right hand, I can't. So learning how to switch my feet and switch my hands, I can totally understand how that would be a difficult task. That's why people like Justin McCray are so impressive to me. I really think that Justin McCray makes this roster. I think that he is, I always call him the Swiss Army knife of the offensive line. I think that he's so versatile, and he's one of those guys that can come in, play either position. And I think the only position he hasn't taken snaps at for the Packers is center. So he's played everywhere. He was also a two-sport athlete, was a wrestler and a football player. I think that he is a versatile option for the team.
I'm going to throw out a name here in relation to Justin McCray, and I'm probably going to catch a lot of crap for this. I like Justin McRae on the roster because he reminds me of Don Barclay.
I think that's fair, though.
And people hate on Don Barclay because he was never great at anything. He was okay at most things. The problem is when you have Don Barclay playing left tackle, that's the biggest problem.
Right. I honestly thought that you were going to say that Justin McRae reminded you of Jordan McRae. I was expecting that. So Don Barclay was a... like a welcome change.
Yeah, Justin McRae reminds me a lot of his twin brother.
Who plays for the Bears?
Oh, man.
Now. So, you know, if they both are on the teams, luckily, I guess, Jordan's not a defensive lineman, but still.
Oh, man, that would be the best. Like when we had the Matthews-Matthews battle, when Clay went up against his cousin in Atlanta, I would love like a good bloodline battle.
I guess the only one that could happen then would be J.J. Watt and Derek Watt if the Texans played the Chargers. I'm not sure about any other brothers that would line up against each other.
I was trying to think of the Gronkowski brothers, but they were always on offense. Didn't one of the Gronkowski brothers get Tony Romo's collarbone broken?
I'm pretty sure
the last time Tony Romo broke his collarbone, one of the Gronkowski brothers was his fullback.
Oh, okay.
And he like missed a block or something. This is of course multiple years ago in a team I give zero craps about, so it's hard to remember specifics.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I was just going to say, one of my favorite stats about Justin McRae is that during his senior year of high school, he made 63 pancake blocks and didn't allow a sack. So just thinking about like high school Justin McRae just pancake blocking people is pretty fantastic to me.
So when you go back and watch high school film of even an average NFL athlete, the talent differential there is always just cuckoo bananas. Like it's always, you don't have to point out the guy on film because you're gonna know who it is 10 seconds later.
Yeah, always.
So moving on from the left guard, we're now
I was literally just going to say that I have the roster up, and now I just think of a Blastoise when I see Billy Turner. So that really was not related to anything.
No worries. For
what you were saying was more important.
I'm going to try and fix as much of this as I can in post, but what people don't realize is there's like a full-on like 2-second delay between you and I, so that's why we end up talking over each other quite a bit.
Oh, okay. I'll pause for longer.
Don't worry. No worries. I'll try and make the sound as I'll remove the awkwardness as much as I can. So moving on to the left tackle, we've got David Bakhtiari. I mean, he's a 97 overall in Madden. He is constantly rated as the best left tackle by Pro Football Focus. He is the first team All Pro, but never in the Pro Bowl. I mean, what else is left to be said?
Yeah, I mean, his talent is just incredible. And when you look at the trajectory of where he's at right now, he really does align with some of the best left tackles to play the game. I mean, he's up there with Joe Thomas's numbers. He's comparable to Andrew Whitworth, who's still playing for the Rams, Tyron Smith for the Cowboys. I think it was something like 25 pressures on 737 pass blocking snaps. Like, those are incredible numbers. And left tackle is arguably the second most important position in football, I guess, outside a quarterback. So for the Packers to have him and have a player that performs as well as he does, left tackle is just far and away, you know, solidified as long as Bakhtiari is playing.
I'm of the opinion that both tackles are now equally important in the passing-heavy league, the way that it's turned into. And I think the the old mentality of, oh, he's not as good of a pass blocker, but he's a road grader. We can put him at right tackle. I don't think that that's necessarily true anymore. And the fact that the Packers have amazing pass blocking bookends is just a testament to what Ted Thompson was able to do in his time in Green Bay.
Yeah, and I mean, that is a really good point. You have guys like J.J. Watt that rush from either side, and you know, and that's why I don't think Brian Bulaga gets enough credit, because people hear left tackle and they think, you know, Bakhtiari holds it down. He plays the quote-unquote harder position, but Brian Bulaga is about as reliable as they come when he's healthy, and that is a big if and a big win, but I think he played in like 14 games the last couple seasons. So it's not like he's missing extended chunks. I think he's missing more for precautionary reasons to make sure that he can play long-term for like those postseason pushes rather than re-injuring something and then having to sit for longer, because there is a drop-off once you get past Bakhtiari and Bulaga as far as who would be the depth at the tackle positions.
Yeah, totally. So, backing up David Bakhtiari, according to Using Our Lads, which a funny story about Our Lads, Zach and I used Our Lads to look at depth charts of all the Packers opponents for the last show that we did. And it turns out that their depth charts at safety weren't exactly accurate, because there was a player for Washington who was supposed to be suspended, but ended up not. And it turns out that suspension was considered null and void like the day before we recorded. So Our Lads isn't always the most accurate. But listed right now as Bakhtiari's backup is Jason Spriggs, which I think is fair.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Light kind of snuck on. He was one of those surprising undrafted players to make the 53. Didn't see a ton of game action at all, but he'll be another name to keep an eye out for during the preseason. You talked a little bit about DeBeer and how much you enjoy him. Another tackle that I'm pretty fascinated by and I can't wait to see during training camp in the preseason is Yashua Nijman. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, but he is a freak athlete. He's 6'7". I think some of his scouting reports had said that he was a little bit stiff, which, when you're 6'7", I get that the bend and flexibility is not as natural to you, but he is for sure a practice squad candidate, if nothing else. But he's a name to keep an eye out for, because he has the talent to push behind Spriggs and Light for one of those backup spots.
Yeah, and I mean, we've both probably mentioned it countless times at this point that the freak athlete is always the one to take the flyer on. Because maybe they can learn to play football, maybe they can't. But you can't teach speed, you can't teach size.
100%.
And sadly, my opinion on Jason Spriggs is that you can't teach reaction time.
Yeah.
He's... I refer to Jason Spriggs as the human lag spike. He's got all the athleticism in the world. He's got all the technique in the world, but he's always half a step behind everything.
Yeah, he has to do something this offseason to put everything together. I know in 2018, the big storyline was that he had added muscle and he was looking bigger and stronger and, you know, moving better. But he just has to be able to keep taking steps, because all of that is great when you do it on paper. And then when you get into the game situation and you don't perform like you expect to, I mean, he's entering now his fourth season. And I just, for a second round pick, I don't know if you could say that he lived up to his draft stock. I guess he did if you were expecting him to not have to play extended looks. But if you drafted him to be a tackle, like for the future of your franchise, once Bulaga potentially retires, then yeah, he needs to show the Packers something new this offseason. Or once training camp starts.
Because Spriggs has everything on paper that you want out of a left tackle, with the exception of not being able to block. Like,
which is a big exception.
I always go back to the preseason game against the Broncos when Jason Spriggs had to try and block Von Miller. and just, I remember Von Miller was already three steps deep before Jason had even squared up to him. And I know going against Von Miller is not fair because he's the outlier. He's one of the three best pass rushers in the league, and it's not fair to say, oh, well, he got beat by Von Miller. Like, it wasn't just that he got beat by Von Miller. He got abused.
Maybe he'll have one of those breakout seasons like when Kyler Fackrell finally won a one-on-one in training camp last season, and then he had 10.5 sacks. So maybe Jason Spriggs will finally, like, show up in training camp and just manhandle everyone, and that'll be his coming out party like Kyler's last year.
I talked so much crap about Kyler Fackrell the last couple of years, and then I went on Twitter. I went on Twitter. I know for a fact. So the thing about Kyler Fackrell is he has a very strong family, and they name search him regularly on Twitter. Right. And his mom blocked me because of all the mean things I was saying about her son. So, Mrs. Fackrell, if for some reason you're listening to this, I was wrong. Your son is not terrible at football. He got a lot of really good sacks last year. I'm sorry.
Now you have to drop your @ so she knows which one to unblock.
I mean, I'm pretty sure she's seen some of my multiple public apologies about Kyler, but she probably just doesn't want to see it. There was one. It was the throwback game when he got three sacks, and one of them was like he fell down onto the quarterback.
The Bills, right?
So it was during that game where, like, I issued a public apology about all the mean things I ever said about Kyler, and it got retweeted like 100 times. So the Fackrell clan had to see it.
I know those wounds run deep. if you can't love him at his worst, you don't deserve him at his best.
Kyler Fackrell is literally a Marilyn Monroe poster on the wall of some sophomore Delta Zeta.
You know, if someone made that and sold it, I would put it in my office tomorrow.
Especially if it's his bearded team photo where he's got crazy eyes and looks like the Unabomber.
When you say things like that, that's why his mom keeps blocking you on Twitter.
He knows damn well last year during his team pictures, he looked like a freak serial killer. Which, by the way, I'm not being insensitive here. His official nickname on Pro Football Reference is Kyler the Freak Fackrell.
I did remember that one. That's a decent one.
My whole thing with official nicknames, it's a big thing. It's a long story. We've all heard it many times. So moving back to bottom of the roster, guys, if we look at the, like, oh my god, like the 12th and 13th options left, we're talking about guys like Adam Pankey and Anthony Coyle and Larry Williams.
Lucas Patrick is another one.
Have you mentioned Lucas Patrick yet?
Who's kind of a bubble guy, but I don't see him latching on this year. I think there's too much depth.
Yeah, I think that recent additions in Elton Jenkins and Cole Madison coming back, and the possible rise of people like Gerard DeBeer, or God forbid, if Yashua ends up being as good of a player as he's an athlete, then yeah, guys like Lucas Patrick are just like the odd man out.
Unless Lucas Patrick can play on special teams again.
That's fair. That's fair. I forgot about that.
Okay, so who would be your nine Packers that are going to make the 53?
Okay.
Out of camp. Your five starters, and then your four backups.
Totally locked in. Bach, Taylor, Lindsley, Turner, Bulaga, Iowa. Then my backups would be Elton Jenkins, because they're not going to cut a second rounder. Justin McCray, because of his swing tackle prowess. I think Cole Madison. out of just, I think that like he's talking about impressing people and then coming in. I think this is the year that we say goodbye to Jason Spriggs. I'm going to take a flyer on Gerard DeBeer as my ninth man.
Okay, I'm glad you did that, because otherwise we would have had really similar ones. So, well, the same, not even similar. I have, you know, Bakhtiari, Taylor, Lindsley, Turner, and Bulaga as my starting five. My immediate backups, I have Elgton Jenkins for his center backup depth and his guard abilities. Cole Madison, I see Cole Madison potentially being a practice squad candidate, but given all of the high praise that he's gotten from the organization, it's hard for me to think that that's just fluff at this point. I think that he's really impressed people and turned heads. So given Ted Thompson's ability to find really good NFL caliber talent on the offensive line in the middle rounds, I think Cole Madison makes the team. Justin McCray, I think he's my Swiss Army knife. I can't let him go. And then I am giving Jason Spriggs one more year, but if Jason Spriggs gets beat out by anyone, I think it'll be Alex Light that makes the team. And then Yash and DeBeer are two practice squad guys
and
for me.
And I would have Yash and Light as my practice squad guys. So we're not that far off. And your Jason Spriggs pick is also probably the more practical one than saying DeBeer, specifically because this is Spriggs' last year on his contract, and he's a high draft pick currently running on a really cheap contract. Like it does. It just makes sense.
Yeah, he's a really low stakes player to keep for one more year. But if you're keeping him because you hope that he doesn't play, then that's where the issue is. So I think he'll stay on for one more year, but I'm not sold that he'll come back after this season.
I'm pretty sure that if Jason Spriggs is garbage this year, he's gone. But if Jason Spriggs is great this year, like if God forbid we need to see Jason Spriggs see some game time and he ends up playing lights out, that dude is gone because someone's going to throw a ton of money at him.
Yeah.
So really it's a.
And then you have DeBeer to come in as the starting right tackle when Bulaga leaves. So you're good.
Oh man. I hope Brian Bulaga never leaves. Brian Bulaga and I are roughly the same age. And I don't like the thought of being too old to do something at this point.
You know, you've been bulking up, so theoretically you could be the next right tackle for the Pack.
So where I'm at currently, I'm about 180 pounds, so I would have to gain probably an entire U to be a right tackle in the NFL.
I'm very flattered that you think I weighed that little.
But like realistically, I would have to gain a full-grown adult in lean mass. That is a. I would also have to grow about a foot. I'm sitting here just a staunch 5'9".
So you have leverage on your side.
Actually, that's what Mike Daniels says.
You can get in the shoulder pad. Exactly.
Like Mike Daniels thinks that his short stature and low center of gravity are what makes him such a good lineman. I don't think that would translate to pass blocking.
Just another hold on the tub. Every play is a hold on the tub.
I'm currently searching shortest right tackle in the NFL. Currently the shortest right tackle in the NFL is 6'4".
Okay.
Yeah, so according to...
So you would need a me on your shoulders.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then...
So according to FoxSports.com, the smallest right tackle in the league is Chris Hubbard of the Pittsburgh Steelers at 6'4", 295. So if I put on a buck 15 and 10 inches of height, I'll be right there.
All right, well, you should start practicing... Just in case things go south.
So, unrelated, Yannick Ngakoue is considered the smallest defensive end in the league at 6'2", 246.
Hmm.
And he's really
good. 246 is small,
he's
though.
Good. Like, really good.
He is really good, but that is... I'm impressed. I'm thoroughly impressed.
I mean, a guy south of 250. Okay, we're completely off the rails, but we made it all the way through our preview.
We did. We took some detours along the way, but we're here now. We have our nine. We each gave nine.
If this is your first time listening to a show that I'm part of, yeah, we took a lot of detours. But if you're a regular listener to my section of the Pack a Day podcast, you know that this was actually pretty to the point.
We streamlined the whole operation.
Well, guys, that will do it for us. We actually managed to make it all the way through. As always, I'm Matt, but you can call me Matub. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, MySpace, Zanga, Friendster, all that stuff.
And I am Maggie Loney. You can find me on Twitter at Maggie Lawler, LAWLER, or through Cheesehead TV, because I write there as well.
All right, guys, that does it for us. As always, I'm Matt, but you can call me Matub, and go Pack 'em.